Good evening, everyone. Welcome back. Hope you all had a nice break. Seems that some of us are still busy with watching Brexit. Yeah. We're all here tonight. But let's get back into things. So we are beginning now the second part. And in the first part, we did a number of things. We talked about introduction preparation for Shabbat, and then cooking and threshing, selecting, plowing, planting, and all of that we did last term. Now we begin tonight the second part of this series, and tonight we will be focusing on three major melachot, three quite important ones: gozez, which means cutting. Then you have melaben, which means cleaning, and finally, following that, we'll do tzovea, dyeing. So some very interesting questions we'll discuss tonight. So firstly, within the context of cutting, combing hair, in the context of cleaning, what happens if a person has stains on his suit, on his dress on Shabbat? What can a person do? And then finally, in the context of tzovea, of dyeing and coloring. Taking it out just of actual act of colouring something, but much more than that. What about sunbathing? A person colours his face. A person sits in the sun for 3-4 hours on Shabbat, and is that a form of dying one on Shabbat? And so on and so forth. Some very interesting contemporary questions, which we will get into tonight. So let's start with gozez. The first part of the show, we're going to discuss gozez. What does gozez mean? Gozez means to cut. In the Mishkan, remember everything which is forbidden on Shabbat is derived from the Mishkan. Now in the Mishkan, what happened is that in order to make the bottom roof of the Mishkan, they would need to take 3 threads of wool and 1 thread of linen and intertwine, make a 4-ply thread, and that's how they would make the bottom roof of the Mishkan. And so in order to get this wool, what do you have to do? Of course, you have to shear a sheep in order to get a wool. So the classical form of gozez, of shearing, is taking a sheep and cutting its wool. Now, of course, we don't find ourselves in these situations too often. But nonetheless, the toladot, the derivatives of gozez, are still very common. And derivatives are equally forbidden from the Torah. So derivatives of gozez are, for example, cutting one's hair. Cutting one's nails, pulling off skin around a person's nails, a wart off a person's body. The definition of gozer is any appendage to the body. Any appendage to the body, cutting that off is called gozer. Any appendage to the body. Cutting a limb, that's not called gozer. It's not an appendage to the body, that is your body. Anything extra to your body, so hair, nails, skin, that's all an appendage. All of that falls under gozez and is forbidden on Shabbat to do so. So the question arises: combing hair. You know, you hear different things about this. Is a person have to comb hair, not allowed to comb his hair? The halacha is quite straightforward. It's important we're aware of this. And unfortunately, this isn't too well known, and people make this mistake on Shabbat. Combing hair on Shabbat, you would say, I'm not actually cutting my hair. I'm just combing my hair. So what could be the problem with doing so? So there is a concept which we've touched upon in the past, and that is the concept of psik resha. Psik resha means you do something, you may not necessarily intend it, it may not be in the front of your head when you're doing it, but if it's an inevitable consequence of your actions, then it's forbidden to do so. So the classical example Gemara talks about is you cut the head of the chicken, not because you want to kill the chicken, but because you want to play with the ball. You want to play with the, you know, that's what they would play in those days. Take the head of the chicken and use it as a ball, or use it as a, that's what they would do in those days. So, says the Gemara, what happens to the person? Says, look, I'm cutting off, I want to give it as a ball to play for my child. But I don't intend to kill the chicken. All right, so seemingly, you know, killing is one of the forbidden melachot, that we'll discuss next week. To not just to kill an animal, but any form of extracting blood, we'll talk about that next week, that's forbidden. So perhaps you could argue here by saying that, look, you know, I don't intend to kill the animal. No. So it's an inevitable consequence. It has to happen. It's 100% going to happen. It's called a psik resha. The word psik resha means cut its head. You're cutting its head, v'lo yamut, it's not going to die. Of course it's going to die. Therefore, we assess that you have intention for that as well, even though you may not necessarily have been thinking about killing the chicken. But since it's definitely going to happen, it's forbidden. When a person combs his hair and brushes his hair with a regular brush with strong and thick bristles, we take on that it's a psik resha, it's inevitable that at least one hair will come out. And that's, you comb your hair, you have a brush, a few hairs come out. Even if you've cleaned the brush, it's always going to happen. When you comb your hair with a brush with strong and thick bristles, then you're always going to have a psik resha, an inevitable consequence of plucking hair out. And even one hair is forbidden. Even one hair. Yeah, a person has one white hair, or you got one black hair, to pluck it out is forbidden, right? Even one. And therefore, when you're combing your hair, it's in psik resha, even though you may not be thinking about taking hair out of your taking hair out, but it's inevitable, and therefore it's forbidden to do so. So it's strictly forbidden to use any brush on Shabbat which has strong and thick bristles. It's not even muksa. You shouldn't have that at all. However, you do get brushes where the bristles are thin and it has like a spongy base. And what that does is that when you're brushing your hair, because it has a soft base, a sponge base, therefore it doesn't exert too much pressure. Because when you are brushing, when you have a solid base, then the pressure rips out hair. When you have a soft sponge base, the bristles fall apart from any, not fall apart, they bend back whenever there's any friction or pressure. And therefore there's no secretion, no inevitable consequence that hair will be cut. Hair may come out, it's possible, but remember, if it's not 100% inevitable, and it's not forbidden even if it does happen, as long as you don't intend for it. If I do something on Shabbat and it's possible there'll be a consequence, I'm not intending that consequence, even if it does happen, it's fine. I'm not intending it. It's only a problem, it's definitely going to happen. Therefore, when you're using a brush with soft bristles or with a sponge base, and it's very easy to get such a brush, I forgot I wanted to bring it into show, but it came. I forgot to bring it in. You have such a brush. It's fine. It's fine to use on Shabbat because of the bristles are soft. Therefore, there's no psik resha. It's not inevitable the hair will be extracted whilst cutting. However, having said that, even when you're using a brush with soft bristles, it's not permissible to brush thoroughly. Okay, brushing thoroughly—that's already—that's not allowed to do. Only brushing, to make a person look respectable and well groomed, that's fine. But to go through a proper thick brush, even if it's soft bristles, to go through a proper comb of a person's hair, that should be avoided during the course of Shabbat. Now, some will tell you, and this is the minhag of Ashkenazim, that you need to have a special brush for Shabbat. Even if you have a soft bristle brush which you use during the week, you should have a unique one designated for Shabbat. That's not our minhag, we don't need to have that. A person can use the same brush which he uses during the week as long as that brush has soft bristles and it's got a soft base. And, the actual bristles can be bent. If you take a brush, most brushes today, that the each bristle is thick and hard and brushes your hair vigorously. As long as the bristles are soft, then a person may comb his hair or brush his hair moderately, not vigorously. So two things to remember always. A brush with thick bristles, that's out of bounds. Such a brush is forbidden to be used on Shabbat at all. If, however, it's a brush with soft bristles, then it may be used as long as it's moderately used. And one doesn't need a special brush for Shabbat. That's fine. Now, talking about hair, what about plaiting hair on Shabbat? Is the person allowed to plait hair on Shabbat? No, why not? Good. So, very good. So one's not allowed to plait hair on Shabbat because it is comparable to building. Right? This isn't a classical building. When you think about building, you don't have a proper building. Nonetheless, the Torah says right at the beginning of the book of Bereshit that when Hashem created Adam and Chava, it says, Vayiven Hashem Elohim et Adam. Hashem created Chava, and the Gemara says on this that when he created her, he actually braided her hair. and brought her to Adam. That's the way she was created, her hair braided and plaited already, and they brought her to Adam like that. And since the Torah uses the word Vayiben, built in the context of plaiting hair, from this week, on a rabbinic level, plaiting hair is forbidden on Shabbat. Okay, so all types. And likewise, the contrary, undoing a plait is forbidden because of, in inverted commas, demolishing. Just like the opposite of building on Shabbat, you can't demolish, you can't knock down a house, like you can't build a house on Shabbat. Similarly, you cannot unbraid a plait like you cannot plait. Yeah, they're both forbidden on a rabbinic level to do so. Now, what about, though, having said that, so you can't plait hair, what about plaiting a wig? Are you allowed to plait a wig on Shabbat? What would you say to that? So it's definitely not building, because that which we saw as building, now it's in the context of chava, that's real human hair, and you know, hair which is attached to that person's body. But to extend that to a wig, where the hair is no longer attached to the person's body, who said that's going to be a problem of building? And therefore, that's not the issue when you are plaiting hair in a wig. There's a different issue called oreg. One of the 39 forms of melacha is weaving, which means taking different, weaving something together. And when you are taking a shetel, a wig, and making a braid in it, it's a form of weaving, and therefore it's forbidden again. On a rabbinic level, because it will eventually the plait will be taken out. But nonetheless, it's still forbidden to do so, to make any plait in human hair because of building, and in a wig no longer attached to a person's body, it's still forbidden because of oreg, because of weaving. With regards to combing a shetel, are you allowed to comb a wig? Okay, so that's fine to comb, because gozez is to detach something from the body. And this is already detached from the body. There's no problem. The only issue one has with the wig is that if the hair is all intertwined, intertangled, okay, it's totally intertangled together, then that would be a problem of makebe patish. I won't go into the details. But generally speaking, if a wig isn't too intertangled, the hairs, then one may comb it on Shabbat. So to summarize about hair, before we move on to nails, so combing hair is forbidden on Shabbat using a brush with thick bristles, and even with soft bristles, only mutar moderately. Now, plaiting a person's hair or a wig are both forbidden, and however, combing a wig is permissible to do on Shabbat. Okay, now let's talk about nails, and then we'll wrap up with the gozes. So nails, it's forbidden to cut on Shabbat, because that, of course, is a form of gozes, form of cutting. What happens if a woman needs to go to the mikvah on Friday night and she has forgotten to cut her nails, or something's happened, she hasn't been able to cut her nails? What is the solution in such a case? What do you do? Postpone, or what needs to be done? So this is a matter of great debate. And the final halakha is that if a woman forgets to cut her nails on Friday night, then a non-Jew should be instructed to cut her nails. The reason being, this is a very important principle, one which comes up over and over again in the laws of Shabbat, and that is shvut dishvut b'makom mitzvah mutar, which means when you have something which is twice removed from a biblical level, so it's rabbinic in nature for two reasons, and there is a mitzvah to be gained by doing it, it becomes permissible. Now, that's the rule. Whenever you have something which is generally forbidden on Shabbat, but it's twice removed from a biblical level, and there's a mitzvah involved, it becomes permissible. So let me explain what this means now. Asking a non-Jew to do something for you on Shabbat, is that forbidden by the Torah? Is that forbidden by the Torah? No, it's not. Forbidden only on a rabbinic level. From the Torah's perspective, Torah's talking to us Jews, we could ask a non-Jew to do something for us, but rabbinically we don't do that. So that's really one rabbinic. Secondly, cutting nails when you don't actually intend to use what you're cutting, In the Mishkan, why did they cut the wool? To use the wool. Cutting nails just to remove it from you and not using what you are cutting, that, according to many, is only forbidden on a rabbinic level. It's called the Malacha She'ina Tzicha L'Gufa. You're not doing it for the same purpose it was done in the Mishkan. Therefore, it's rabbinic. And if we have two rabbinics here, actual act of, you're asking a non-Jew, which is rabbinic, to do something which is forbidden rabbinically, cutting nails. And therefore, b'makom mitzvah, when there is a mitzvah at stake, one may ask the non-Jew to do so. And therefore, this is the halakha. If a woman forgets to cut her nails before Shabbat, she may instruct a non-Jew to cut the nails with a nail cutter. It's fine to do so. Put out their hands, and the non-Jew will cut it. That's accepted. Of course, one shouldn't bring oneself into such a situation. But if one finds oneself in such a situation, one may instruct a non-Jew to cut. What about instructing a non-Jew to comb a woman's hair? That's also permissible. Just very briefly, the reason being is because Sikresha Ali De Grama is Mutar. I won't go into the reason behind it, but that's the principle. It's inevitable consequence of the hair coming out, but it's only happening through a non-Jew, which is Mutar. Psikresha Ali De Akum is Mutar. When you ask a non-Jew to do something which is a Psikresha, it's permissible. So for example, if you have a light in your fridge, you didn't switch the light up before Shabbat, you can ask a non-Jew to open the fridge for you. Because why are you opening the fridge? You're opening the fridge to get your food out. It's a psikresha, it's inevitable the light will go on. So that you can't do yourself. But you can instruct the non-Jew to do it. Why? Because psikresha, through the medium of a non-Jew, is permissible. Therefore as well, a non-Jew could comb her hair for the mikveh. Why? Because it's a psikresha, it's inevitable the hair will come out. But it's happening through a non-Jew, and therefore it's permissible to do.
On the cutting nails, if someone's embarrassed to do that, can they do it for a shinui, which also brings it down?
So that's an excellent question, and that boils down to whether shvut de shvut always needs one shvut to be not asking a non-Jew. And the halakha is, Haravadiyah Paskin says it's permissible to cut with her teeth or with her hand. One final point about nails is that, just finish on one point about nails, and that is if a person sometimes can be very, very annoying, you have a part of your nail has become detached, it can be quite bothering. And what do you do in such a case? Are you allowed to detach it or not? So, again, using the same logic, a nail which the majority of it has been detached is no longer considered attached from the Torah perspective. It's not considered attached from a Torah perspective. It's the majority's come off. It's still forbidden to do so, rabbinically. And cutting your nails in an unusual manner, remember, any melacha, again, it's another important principle, any melacha which is done bishino in an unusual manner is also forbidden rabbinically. So, cutting your nails by biting them or by pulling them with your hand, that's not a normal way of cutting nails. Right? Normal way of cutting nails is you use a nail cutter. Therefore, if a person finds himself in pain, it's a lot of bother from this nail, which is slightly detached. So it's three conditions. Number one, it's pain, it's painful, it's bothering you considerably. Number two, the majority of your nail has been detached. And thirdly, you detach it, you the Jew detaches it using hand or teeth, as opposed to a nail cutter, that is permissible to do so. All fine. But again, if it's the majority of the nail, it's bothering you considerably, and you're cutting off with your hands or with your nails, or in hands or teeth, that's fine to do so on Shabbat. An alternative you could do, if you wanted to use a nail cutter, it's too painful for you to use your hand, what could you do instead? Ask an Andrew. Because asking Andrew is one rabbinic, it's already detached. Two, because of the pain, you would be allowed to do so. That's an alternative you have. On final point with skin, very common, sometimes you have skin on your lips. Yeah? And even subconsciously, what we can sometimes do is with our teeth, pull off the skin. Be very careful with that. because they're pulling off skin that's an appendage to the body, and that is a classical form of gozes. And Mishnah Brah even wants to take on this as a biblically forbidden, because this is the normal way of doing it. The way, although with your hand, we said if you use your, if you cut your nails with your, but you bite your nails, or use your hands, that's forbidden rabbinically, it's not a normal way of doing it, but on your lips, some argue that's the normal way of doing so. Right, and therefore it's forbidden for the person to be very careful with that, doesn't pull off skin off his lips using his teeth. So, summarize what we talked about, gozes. We have talked about, number one, the principal idea of gozes is shearing wool, but the derivatives of that is cutting nails, cutting hair. We talked about combing hair, and we explained that combing hair is forbidden. It's only permissible if one uses a brush with soft bristles and he combs his hair moderately. And then we talked about also forbidden plaits and hair or wig, but combing a wig is permissible in most circumstances. And then finally, we talked about nails. We explained that cutting nails is forbidden, and a woman who needs to cut her nails should ask a non-Jew to do so. And also combing hair is permissible as well. And if a person finds himself in a nail where it should be, which is bothering him, and the majority of it's been detached, one may bite it off on Shabbat. One may ask an Andrew. Okay. Any questions on that before we move on?
If someone normally bites their nails, is that not an issue?
No. Good question. Because we go after the Derech Bnei Adam, after most human beings. Now, apparently, most human beings, well, at least in those times, didn't bite their nails. You're asking the question that if today we would establish the majority of people bite their nails, I doubt it. Would the halakha change? It's possible. But I think we can agree that most people, they, when they cut their nails, they cut it using a nail cutter. Good. Any questions on that? So that's kibbutz, that's gozes, that is cutting. Moving on now. Second melacha of tonight is melaben. Let's actually go to Tzoveah. Let's go to Tzoveah and we'll come back to melaben later. Okay? Let's go to Tzoveah. Tzoveah means to dye, to color. So what was the coloring in the Mishkan? Because, like we've explained in the past, what was the coloring in the Mishkan? The bottom roof had different threads which were dyed with blue, scarlet, crimson. So that dyeing process was part of the building of the Mishkan, and therefore any form of dyeing on Shabbat is forbidden from the Torah. That's the classical form of dyeing. It's important to understand that coloring something isn't just taking an existing surface and changing its color. So, to paint a white wall red, that of course is a classical case of tzoveah, of coloring. What happens if I'm enhancing an existing color? So I have a white surface and I paint it again white. Or I have black shoes and I want to polish my shoes, which are already black, make them even blacker. So tzoveah, it's important to be aware, tzoveah, dyeing and coloring, is not just changing the color of something, but the enhancement of an existing color is similarly forbidden. Which is why polishing shoes, one of the reasons why polishing shoes is strictly forbidden on Shabbat. Because you are coloring the shoes in the sense, you're taking the existing shoe and the color of black and making it blacker. Now, there is an important distinction between writing and coloring. When you draw a picture, that doesn't fall under coloring. That falls under writing. Okay, we won't go too much into the details now, but in short, the idea of tzoveah, of coloring, of dyeing, that is taking something which already exists and enhancing its appearance. Whereas when you are creating something for the first time, that's not tzoveah. Therefore, when you're creating the drawing, you're actually creating the drawing, that is, that falls under writing. You're creating something. Coloring it in afterwards, that is the form of tzoveah. Okay. Now, question arises, what happens with regards to food and drink? Coloring food and drink. So, for example, let's say a person... let's say a mother wants to serve her toddler with yogurt. And it's a white yogurt. Wants to make it more appetizing. Wants to put in something red to color it. To make it. Jam? Yeah, the jam to make it. So what's clear and is agreed by everyone is if you're just adding two foods together and it happens to be the colors change, it's absolutely fine, no question about that. I'm talking about something more than that. Is that you're actually adding the two foods together to create the color. So you're adding the jam to the yogurt, not because the child necessarily likes the jam, but just because to make the yogurt from white to red. The halakha, which we follow, and this is definitely for Sephardim and most Ashkenazim as well, is that it's permissible to do so. One may do so because in tzviya ba'ochalin, there is no coloring when it comes to foods. Foods are something so transient, they don't last for long. That wasn't part of the melacha of Tzovah. Also, it didn't happen in the Mishkan. They didn't color food, they colored material. For a number of reasons, we hold that there's no tzviya, there's no coloring when it comes to food, and therefore one may mix foods together with the express intention of creating a color, as long as it's for eating purposes. That's the important point. As long as it's for eating purposes. As opposed to? No, drinking as well, I mean. I mean, as opposed to, let's say, business purposes. You know, for example, you have this now, this new restaurant to open on Shabbat. Tish? You heard about it? Over on Shabbat, yeah. So you pre-book before Shabbat?
It's
a few months. You pre-book before Shabbat.
From that point of view, yeah.
No, but it's open on Shabbat itself.
Yeah.
So, there, if the chef, the food is all, it's a part of it. It's the whole show in itself how it works. But all the food is cooked before Shabbat. Mm-hmm. You pay before Shabbat.
Yeah.
So if, for whatever reason, the food wasn't cooked for Shabbat, and you want to mix, or let's say you just want to mix the foods together for the client, that's forbidden in doing business purposes. And much more than that, this is forbidden from the Torah, is to color something for ornamental purposes. It's to take a liquid, water, and to put in it a color and to keep in your house as an ornament. That doesn't fall under this heter of entzvia, there's no coloring with food and drinks. This is what Rishab said, that you can mix foods together and give color to them. That's only when you're doing it for food purposes. It's going to be eaten, the toddler's going to eat it, etc. You're doing it for food purposes and no other intention. You just want it to be consumed, and therefore you're giving color to it. If you're doing it for business purposes or for ornamental purposes, you're not doing it to eat or to drink, you're coloring water as an ornament in your house. That is forbidden, strictly forbidden because of coloring. That's pretty straightforward. What happens if a person is bleeding? Can he or she go and take a towel and or a towel or something like that and put it around his finger? Because you could argue that you're colouring the towel. Similarly, you've eaten strawberry and some pomegranates, your hands are red, and now you want to go and wipe them on a towel. Is that permissible? So the halakha is it is permissible. Because, again, this is an important principle of evidence, which means an inevitable, you are drying your hands. That's what you're trying to do. Inevitably, you are colouring the towel. It's inevitable. But it's only on a rabbinic level because it's not constructive what you're doing. Obviously, and it's not constructive what you're doing. Mikalkel, it's the Rabbanan, and it's lo nichale, you have no benefit from it. It's destructive and you have no benefit from it. Therefore, it's mutar to do so. However, having said that, poskim do say that if one has the opportunity, one has the availability to wash his hands, then one should do so, rather than directly. So if one has a tap nearby, and one can go and first wash the wound, or wash his hands from the strawberries, and then dry, that's certainly better. If, however, it's out of reach, one may directly put the dressing on the wound, or directly dry his hands on the towel on Shabbat. We don't consider that as being tzoveh. That's an important point to be aware of.
Is that concept of bleeding in itself?
No, you can't be.
Is considered to be urgent enough that we back court?
Not necessarily. You can walk 10 seconds into the... We're talking about something where, you know, a person suffering from hemorrhage or something like that, or he's got an illness where he had every drop of blood, of course, that's obvious. I'm talking about, you know, you've cut your finger, and till you go and get the plaster, you get the gauze on, you don't wash it first. Now, when it comes to makeup, so makeup, colouring the face, is also forbidden because of tzoveya. However, this is only forbidden on a rabbinic level. Because, why do you think it's forbidden on a rabbinic level? Because it's not permanent.
It's temporary.
Exactly. Temporary. It's not, it doesn't, yeah, it's eventually within 24 hours, 48 hours, it's going to come off. It's going to cause. And therefore, since anything which is not permanent, which you do on Shabbat, is forbidden from the Torah. But nonetheless, all forms of makeup, lipstick, etc., are forbidden on Shabbat to use. Having said that, there is now something on the market, which was actually discussed, it's actually discussed when 40, 50 years ago, Moshe Feinstein wrote about this. So the reason why something like makeup is forbidden is because it sticks to the face. It's most makeups are oil-based, cream-based. Okay, I'm not a major expert in makeup, but from the little research I've done about this, most makeups are oil-based or cream-based. And because so, they adhere, they adhesive to the face. And therefore, it's transient, it's transient 24 hours, but it still has some sort of permanence to be forbidden on a rabbinic level. When you use something which is not oil-based, and not cream-based, it's just the powder itself, something like that, not only is it so transient, but more than that, it doesn't actually get absorbed into the face, it's just on the outside of the face. Something like that, the majority of the poskim permit it. Rabbi Yehuda permits it, Moshe Feinstein permits it, Shem Zalman Auerbach wasn't happy about it, but majority of poskim do permit it. Because for the two reasons I mentioned, number one, it's so transient, it only lasts for a few hours. Okay. And secondly, it's the exterior, it's like putting something, you have a white piece of paper and a cover with a red, cover with something red on top, it's not called colouring the white piece of paper, just covering it. So I have to argue here as well, hey, I'm just putting something on my face, I'm not actually, it's not getting absorbed into the face like makeup normally does, because it's oil based, it's cream based, it actually colours the face in a sense. If it's just powder on the outside, it's permissible. And therefore, you know, you can buy this now, it's Shabbat makeup, it's called. The idea behind it is that there's no oil, no cream in it, it's pure powder. Having said that, you have to be careful that those women who do use such makeup on Shabbat, that they're not putting it, applying it on existent makeup. Because if you have makeup from before Shabbat, which was cream-based, oil-based, etc., and then you go and put this powder on it on Shabbat, then you're rubbing in this powder when using that oil. Therefore, if you want to use this powder, one has to make sure that her face is clean, no makeup on it, and only then putting the powder on, that would be permissible to do so on Shabbat. There's no issue in the slightest of removing makeup on Shabbat. The whole problem is colouring, putting it on, removing is permissible to do. What about sunbathing on Shabbat? Is one allowed to sunbathe on Shabbat? What would you say? I'm not talking about one's walking down, you know, it's a hot day, I'm walking down the streets, going for a long walk, and it gets tan. I'm talking about somebody sits in the sun, he's away on holiday in the summer, it's extremely hot, and he sits in his balcony 2-3 hours reading his book with the express intent to colour himself. What would you say?
No.
Why not?
Because you are colouring. If you were to sit in the sun with the intention of enjoying the sun, you would be allowed to. If you're doing the express intention of changing the colour of your skin, it's forbidden.
Okay, that sounds logical. Any other comments, suggestions? Everyone agrees to that?
It's not like you're adding a dye that it was in Mishkan. It's
why not?
Like, using the sun, it's like using a sunspray and egg. Should be right.
So, that's an interesting point. That's a nice comparison, but it's not so correct that because the idea of why you like to use the sun is because the Bishul in the Mishkan was using fire, right? And the sun, at least, leaving physics aside, the sun isn't considered a fire, okay? Whereas here, you know, this is you can colour in such a form. You know, you are actually changing your skin. So I'll come back.
I'd say you're not
part
dying.
Of nature.
Oh, okay.
It's part of nature.
What do you mean it's part of nature? What do you mean by that?
You're not doing anything.
Can I cut anything from the sun? So, the Poskim talk about this, and there are divided opinions about it. What's clear is that this is a case of grammar. This is indirect. You're not doing anything. You're just sitting, and it's happening to you. That's different to taking something out into the sun and frying it, or going actually and colouring something. Applying makeup to your face. You are actively going and doing something. Whereas when you're just sitting back and allowing the sun to color you, that's grammar, it's indirect. Now I will tell you that this isn't so clear, this. There are quite a few argue with this because they argue that the whole essence of dying is that it's a gradual process. The real form of dying, how you have a dying vat, you put something in the dying vat and you keep it in there and it takes time. Just like, for example, nobody would argue that cooking is a grammar. Think about it. You put your raw potatoes in the oven, takes half an hour to cook. Right? Why do we not say that's grammar? That's indirect. I put it in, and then I left it. It happened by itself. We don't say that. Because the essence of bishul, some melachot, their essence, negates the heter of grammar, indirect. And therefore some argue that tovea falls under the same. And therefore, there are a handful of poskim who do not allow some bathing on Shabbat with the express intention of doing so. However, as I've said, the majority of poskim do say, like Ovadia writes as well, that one is allowed to sunbathe on Shabbat, even with the intent of doing so, because of this idea, it's a grammar, it's an indirect, it's not directly happening, and therefore permissible to do so. However, having said that, there is another concern that everyone agrees to, and that is one mustn't do something to oneself on Shabbat which is painful to him, even if he's getting a side benefit from it. Now, sometimes you can be sitting in the sun for so long, and it's not comfortable, but you're doing it because you're excited to go back and show your tan off. Right, but you don't actually enjoy that time you're sitting in the sand, in the sun. So that would be a problem. That comes to everyone because Shabbat is given for honor. It's given for to enjoy oneself. It's not given for a person to be thinking about these things. And therefore, if a person's doing it and he's not enjoying it, that's a problem. That's not permissible because you are taking away from the enjoyment of Shabbat. There's also the idea of the spirit of Shabbat. Again, these are very malleable ideas, which is depends on each person how
some
he feels.
Some people sunbathe for medical reasons, like getting vitamin D and things
okay,
like
so
that.
Okay, so let me talk about that in a second. Actually, I'll talk about that now. So there is a principle that you don't have to do medical things on Shabbat. Okay, but there's another principle, anything which is done by normal people is permissible. So a classical example of this is a person has constipation. Okay? If a person's constipated and there's nothing severe, one's not allowed to take medicine for it. Nothing severe. Okay, it's just uncomfortable, and we'll talk about this in future lectures. However, to drink prune juice is permissible. Why? Because prune juice, it's a thing which normal people do. There's nothing intrinsically medicinal to this act that you're doing. Similarly, because most people, when they sunbathe, they're doing it to enjoy the sun, not doing it for medical purposes. Therefore, even if you are doing it for medical purposes, it's still permissible. So, coming back to sunbathing, the final halakha is one may sunbathe on Shabbat, even with the intent of tanning oneself. However, whether it's advisable or not is something which a person himself needs to decide about, and certainly not if a person ends up feeling uncomfortable. So, you have to use your common sense. Sitting in the sun 20 minutes, half an hour, enjoying oneself, reading a book, that makes sense. If a person spends the whole Shabbat afternoon trying to soak up the sun to change the colour of his face, then that's something which would be problematic. One final question with regards to Tzoveya, and this is this can be quite a problem actually. Toilet hygienifiers. So you get these things you put in the toilet, which when you flush the toilet,
yeah.
It gives the colour, the blue, sometimes green. It gives a color to the water in the toilet. So are you allowed to have one of those in your toilet on Shabbat when you're flushing it to cause in the water to become colored? Is that a problem or not? So we have to distinguish between two types of these hygienifiers. One is where the hygienifier is in the cistern.
Yeah.
The toilet cistern. So that, according to everyone, is permissible. Why is that the case? Because what happens there? When you flush the chamber, what happens is the water comes down into the toilet. And then, after that, new water comes up, and then it will get coloured by the hygienifier sitting in the cistern, hanging in the cistern. So that's not a direct consequence of your actions. That's indirect. Are you with me? Right? It's not happening directly. You're flushing the toilet, the water's coming down, that's no colour there. Then the water is building up in the system, and by the time it reaches the top, it hits the hygienifier and becomes coloured. So that's called psychoresia. It's definitely going to happen, but it's going to take time to happen. That's a psychoresia through a grammar, indirect, which is permissible. That's like we've learned, you may remember, we learned last time, that you're allowed to pour water off your roof, off your sukkah, for example. You can't pour it directly onto your grass. What you can do is pour it onto the concrete, which then rolls onto the grass. See the difference? It's inevitably happening. It's gonna pour off onto the grass, but it's only indirectly happening, and that's permissible. Psychoresia with the grammar, an inevitable consequence which is happening indirectly, is permissible. And therefore, with this hygienifier, you're putting it there in the system. It's happening. It's inevitably happening, but it's happening only through an indirect consequence. Therefore, it's forbidden. It's permissible to do so. The problem arises when you have the hygienifier within the toilet itself, within the bowl of the toilet. Because then when you flush the toilet, the water is actually going through this and becoming coloured. And so by your action of flushing the chain, you are colouring the water in the toilet. So what do you think about that? Would that be permissible or not? So one thing you cannot say, you know, coming back to what you mentioned before, you can't say there's no colouring with a liquid, even though it's a liquid. No colouring with food, because it isn't food or drink, right? So that logic, of course, doesn't stand. Some want to argue, this is an interesting argument, some want to argue that this is a grammar. Even this case is indirect. Why is that? Because they want to argue that when you flush the chain, what's happening? How does it, when you flush the chain, what happens? How does the water come out? You have something like a panel which is preventing the water from falling out. When you flush, you're removing that panel, then that water comes out. So some want to argue that that's also indirect. Because all you're doing with your act of flushing is removing this panel. The water then falls down of its own accord or of gravity. You see the idea? Right? You're not actually taking water and pouring it on the hygienifier and through it and colouring the water. You are flushing the chain, which has the effect of removing the panel, then the water falls through. So some want to say that's a grammar. When you're removing something which causes something, some argue that's a grammar, that's indirect, that's permissible, and therefore through a psychoresia would be mutar. Okay, that's disputable. There is another argument put forward to say it's mutar as well, because they want to say that it's so transient, it doesn't last at all, and it's, they want to argue that Sovea is only when you colour something to the extent you can colour something else. In any case, this is a greatly debated topic amongst the contemporary poskim. There are many who are permitted, but nonetheless, one should try from before Shabbat to remove it. One has such one in, I'm talking about in the bowl itself. In the system, we say you can keep it, that's fine. In the bowl, one should try to remove it. If one finds himself on Shabbat, he's not able to, he's in somebody else's house and he has it, there is plenty to rely on for a person to excuse himself. In such a toilet, it's permissible to do so. That brings us to the end of Tzovea. Any questions on Tzovea, on Kalamis? Just summarize what we talked about Tzovea. We have explained that coloring and dyeing is one of the forms of melacha on Shabbat. And we've explained that enhancing color is also forbidden. And there is no coloring when it comes to food or drink. One may mix foods together for the intent of coloring them, as long as you're doing it for food purposes. Similarly, drinks as well. You may make a fruit juice on Shabbat. It's fine to do so. And makeup, we said, is forbidden rabbinically. But we said powder. The powder form seems to be permissible, but we must ensure that one doesn't apply it on existing makeup. Tanning, sunbathing on Shabbat with the intent of tanning oneself, we said, is permissible, but in moderation, not in a situation where a person is in discomfort during the course of Shabbat. And finally, using the Ajinify, we've explained that if it's in the cistern, it's permissible, but if it's a natural bowl, one should try to remove from before Shabbat. Otherwise, one would be allowed to use the toilet if necessary. Any questions on Samia? Correct. It's a good question, that. But it's happening to food. You're colouring food. And food, in its essence, is something that doesn't last. Therefore, there's a blanket heter that food, there's no tzviya, there's no colouring when it comes to food. Therefore, one would be allowed to do so, to use food colouring. From a Shabbat perspective, from a health perspective, it's something else, but one's allowed to use food colouring. But at least from Shabbat, one is allowed to.
Also, in the past, when you do coffee, you should put the coffee first and then the water.
Yeah.
So that's
a chumrah, which even according to the Ashkenazim is a chumrah. Even according to the Ashkenazim, it's a chumrah to do so. Meikar hadin, there's no tzviya with liquids or solids. It's a stringency for Ashkenazim to do so, and you know, some also say for Sfaradim as well. But meikar hadin, it's absolutely permissible to do so. Some say that when you reverse the normal order, you're deviating, therefore it's no longer a shinoi. So therefore they say when you're making a fruit juice, or making, let's say, or a bean or something like that, the common way of doing it during the course of the week is what? First you pour in the water, and then you add however many drops you want of Ribena. On Shabbat, if you're doing it the other way around, you're deviating if it's permissible. But again, that's a big chumrah, and from not it's certainly good to do so, but the halakha for most people is permissible.
Is there a problem regarding forming shapes, possibly towards writing?
So we'll talk about when we get to Kosher. When we get to writing, we'll talk about that. It can be. We'll discuss that when we get there. I can't answer that on one foot, but it's an issue which we will discuss when we get to writing. So there is another topic which I wanted to discuss: cleaning. We're going to leave that for next week. We'll go over that. We'll do that next week. So we've just done two melachot this day. We've done gozes, shearing, cutting, and also coloring. Next week we will, please God, 22nd of January, we will get into cleaning, laundering. You have a stain on your suit. What you do, and other cleaning your clothes from dust. Are you allowed to do that or not? So on and so forth. We will also discuss next week some very important topics, making knots on Shabbat, when you're allowed to make knots, tying one's shoelaces, tying up the dustbin, etc. These types of things, and also animals. We'll discuss animals next week in the context of trapping and hunting, domesticated animals, pet animals, and other various interesting questions. Bezat Hashem, that will be next Tuesday night.